The following podcast contains strong language and frank conversations about topics that some listeners may find upsetting.
Welcome to Positive Advice, a podcast by Cheever. We're the charity that puts young people living with HIV first, giving them control over their healthcare, happiness, and giving them a voice in the conversation on HIV. I'm your host, Eli Fitzgerald, and I'm here to give our voice to the experts. In every episode, we've dug through the Positively Spoken archive and heard the stories that young people living with HIV have passed down to Cheever. During those conversations, a topic that kept cropping up was activism. Many young people are determined to have their voices heard and get their opinions across. So what can we do to support them? Where should they start? And how do you do it? As always, I'm joined by Amanda Ely, Cheever's CEO. Thanks for joining me, Amanda.
You're welcome, Eli. Glad to be here.
So, Amanda, how important is it that the thoughts and opinions of young people are heard when discussing living with HIV?
I think it's really critical, Eli. We know that young people who've grown up living with HIV have a distinct experience. It's really different when you've had HIV your whole life, when your childhood experiences have all been lived through the experience of having HIV from a young age. And so it can be really different. And I think there's a lot of nuance in those differences. And, it's so important that the lived experiences around HIV are all understood in different ways. And if you're an adult and you acquired HIV as an adult, that experience is going to be so very different from somebody who's had HIV as a child. And that's what, you know, we're all about at Cheever, really, is amplifying those voices, those experiences, and aiming to improve wider understanding in that respect.
Amanda, do you think young people often get sidelined when HIV is discussed?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. And I think young people get sidelined, full stop. You know, I think that's a general experience of being young. We're used to adults being in control. Adults have authority. Adults make decisions. Even in a family context, in every other context, you know, it's adults generally that have the control. And, so it's very easy for young people to be sidelined. And I think that HIV added to that experience of just being young and it's harder to have your voice heard. You know, it's an added kind of challenge. I think, you know, a big part of that is the fact that for many young people we know growing up with HIV in the UK, it's very difficult for them to be open about their HIV. So if they're not living openly about, in regards to having HIV, then having their voices heard is even more difficult in that respect. And we know that, you know, a lot of young people find living openly really difficult for very valid reasons.
Which I guess is why sort of projects like Positively Spoken are so important. But could you expand just a bit more on how important these projects are for young people living with HIV, but for also just the general public?
I mean, it's exactly this whole area of having your voice heard, having your experiences, your views, your opinions, and the telling of your own story, having that validated. Nobody's telling your story for you. Nobody's telling you what you should think or feel or do around your HIV, but actually anything in life, because the whole aim of Positively Spoken is to share the stories of young people who've grown up with HIV, and not just their HIV experience, but their whole rich life experience. And in doing so, you know, our hope is that Positively Spoken kind of contributes to a humanising of the HIV experience. It makes it, you know, individual, unique, rich, varied. And, you know, it's so important that people understand sort of something like HIV and how it impacts socially, how it impacts on people's family lives, on their education, all these different ways in which, you know, HIV might be kind of weaving its way through a young person's experiences. Positively Spoken allows that kind of richness to come through. And before we started this project, you know, nobody had collected the stories of young people. We've heard a lot about adults' experiences. We've had some fantastic portrayals of that in things like the recent TV drama series It's a Sin. It was a really important drama series to highlight HIV and to think about what that meant for particular communities and how it impacted on them. But that's just one story. And I think unless we have other stories and other experiences, we do run the risk of kind of perpetuating stereotypes about what HIV is and who it affects. And, you know, that's something that we feel really strongly about at Shiva, that, that we mustn't have anything sort of, you know, it's really important that we challenge ongoing stereotypes around HIV.
Do you think in the future there will be another series like It's a Sin using the stories we've gathered in the Positively Spoken archive?
Well, this is the thing, because it will mean that all those stories are there. And in the future, yeah, I do hope a creative young director pitches up at the British Library and says, I want to make a story about what it's like to have HIV when you're growing up as a child, because that's a really unique story. And actually, thankfully, because of, you know, all the way that we are progressing with the fantastic success of HIV treatments, you know, thankfully in the future, it probably will just be a historical story and children won't be born with HIV because of the success of treatments. So it's something so important to preserve now and capture now, because these unique experiences will be lost to history otherwise. And we think that's very important, that there is a legacy here.
I'm also joined by Dr. Wendy Rickards, who works with Chiva on the Positively Spoken Oral History Project and has worked on HIV archives held at the British Library since the 80s. How does it feel to be the one being interviewed?
Very strange. So normally I'm practicing not making any noise at all and nodding and using my hand gestures. So now I have to actually speak.
So through your time working on projects like Positively Spoken, how has activism in regards to HIV over the years changed, and what has it achieved?
I think it has changed massively, but in a way it's kind of, I don't know, history tells tales as well. It kind of comes back around. So being at the conference in Montreal this summer, at the International AIDS Conference, I think it was the 1987 Montreal AIDS Conference, where activism was starting to really take off and there was a storming of the stage. And that happened in a small way at this year's Montreal conference as well. So it reminded me of those, that kind of fervour coming out in a slightly different way for slightly different reasons. But that's always what's been very exciting around HIV and AIDS, I think, and around oral history around HIV and AIDS as well, because it is about kind of reclaiming history, changing the way that stories are told, changing the narrative of who gets to tell the story. And that's a really important thread for HIV activism.
We've asked all our guests throughout the series about what activism means to them and what they think the future will look like. We'll hear more from them later on, but first it's time for a clip. Today we'll hear what young people at the 24th International AIDS Conference in Montreal 2022 had to say about activism. Starting with Kareem, who had this to say about his journey.
I think my life will be around HIV for the rest of my life. I don't see anything that I'm going to do that will make me more happy, like working with an organization or agency that is concerned about the affairs and the good life of people with HIV. So basically, I don't know, it was a dream. WHO, the UN, I think as from I was age 14, UNICEF, during my fantasies, UNICEF crossed my mind. All my fantasies, like for a long time now. So I look forward to working with those organizations. I look forward to sharing my ideas. I look forward to my story going far, my story changing life, my story inspiring a lot of young people going through this phase of their life. So that's my vision.
It sounds like Kareem is very determined to enter the world of activism and has a clear vision for what he wants to achieve. What would you both consider are the best ways to get started?
I think at Chiva, you know, we have a really strong commitment to empowerment and to helping young people feel empowered to effect change, whilst also wanting to make sure that they do that in a way that's completely comfortable for them and that doesn't bring them greater challenges. And one of the biggest issues can be, you know, how can you effect change and be empowered to use your voice when you're not open about your HIV. So, you know, what role can an organisation play in helping you to do that if you don't want to then be open about HIV in all areas of your life, which many young people don't? So it is something I think to think really carefully about. And over the years, you know, we've had so many requests from media companies to interview a young person growing up with HIV, for them to appear in a documentary, for their story to be shared in the press, etc. You know, people are really interested in that experience. But you have to be so careful that it isn't then, you know, exploitative or at the expense of somebody's personal life, personal experiences. And another really important consideration is the family context. And this is something that's really come up in this Positively Spoken project. For young people who've grown up with HIV, it's not just their own HIV they're likely to be revealing. It's, you know, it's something that the vast majority have acquired from their mum. And therefore, in them talking about their own experience, they are potentially going to reveal somebody else's experience, i.e. their mother and perhaps other family members, and that makes it more complicated. So I think the challenge is helping young people to have their voices heard, to feel empowered, to, you know, affect change in the way that they want to affect change, whilst also having some protection around some of those personal considerations, the family experience, etc. And that's where organisations really have a strong role and a duty, I would say, to offer ways in which young people can be heard without, you know, maybe without even revealing who they are.
Do you think, so for Kareem, there's definitely a sense that it's sort of on him to share parts of his story, to be that person people can look up to, because it sort of sounds like he didn't have that. And I think a lot of people feel that when it comes to activism. I know I felt that quite a bit. But do you think that works for everyone?
I think it's important to remember that the people that we're hearing, the stories that we're hearing from Montreal, are all from people who have already sort of made some quite big steps in terms of activism around HIV, and that's why they're there at the conference. So I think at the end of each one's interview with us, they were saying very clearly, look, this is the path I've already taken through activism. I'm already here representing big groups of people. I've already made that step. So that's, I mean, something quite curious and interesting about recording in those kinds of environments, is that they're kind of like, they're dizzied by the international elements of it, but they're cementing something they've already put in place really strongly.
How do you think we find space for those activists that don't necessarily get those opportunities or have been privileged enough to attend something as big as the International AIDS Conference?
We go find people. And there were people at the, you know, I think the whole thing about those international conferences is that there are people there spreading rumours and stories the whole time, isn't there, about like, look, come to my country. There's people back in my country that need to speak, that need to want to be activists in this kind of way. This is about opening up doors. This is about finding strange little routes in to give people a voice and to let people be heard. And so there's exciting little synergies that go on at those international conferences that can potentially unearth quiet people who are getting on doing amazing, fantastic stuff in a quiet corner of Indonesia or something like that. And those connections are made because of, you know, this whole global village that has subsumed everybody in those moments at those international conferences, which is so strange but so sort of important.
Let's hear another clip from the Positively Spoken archive. This time it's Portia.
So it sounds like you've been very pioneering in your life to stand up and
yes,
lead things,
ma'am,
and start things.
Yeah.
Where does that come from within you, do you think?
I think I suffer from imposter syndrome real bad. Like, I think I don't even recognize the leadership within me. Like, but I think it just stems from just knowing what I needed, you know what I'm saying? Like, not having it for myself and then wanting to, as I continue to heal and as I continue to grow, create those spaces that I wish that I had when I was in my early 20s or in middle school or, you know, yeah, I think that that's where that stems from. And then I think I also, I feel like I'm the queen of using my pain as power and my trauma as power. Like, I want to, like, experience softness and not to always have to grow from, like, being hurt or, like, traumatic experiences. But I don't know. I feel like I do a really good job with turning it into power somehow, some way. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm very resilient.
So in that clip, Portia mentions a sort of feeling of imposter syndrome. I was wondering if either of you had any tips on how to cope with imposter syndrome.
It just really makes me think about this whole theme of belonging, you know, where you feel you belong, where you feel included, accepted. It's such an important theme in HIV. I mean, it's an important theme in lots of other things, but it comes up so much in our work, in our conversations with young people about what they want and need and what they get, hopefully, when they do, you know, connect with their peers who also live with HIV, that shared experience, the sense of acceptance and belonging. And Portia really, you know, reflects back on what she needed, and that's what's driving her in her activism, is trying to create the sorts of spaces that she would have liked to have had, where she felt belonging and acceptance. And I guess this is where the sort of imposter, you know, concept sits, doesn't it? It's feeling like you don't belong here. Yeah. And she knew she needed to belong somewhere. And she puts it so beautifully, like, using my pain as power is just so, so powerful. But also that she kind of wishes she didn't have to. She doesn't want to be driven by her trauma. And this is something we were picking up on before, you know, it's not just about the trauma, and we just focusing on the trauma can be harmful as well.
I think it's this idea that you often get trauma and resilience simultaneously in the same person. And Portia represents that so strongly, doesn't she? So she's got the pain, but she's also got the power, and the term resilience comes up a lot in her throughout her interview. I think this idea that you can overcome imposter syndrome is another kind of challenge for oral history. And if you listen to real people's stories all the way through, you know, you can overcome your imposter syndrome for 10 minutes on this particular day because you're held and you feel good about yourself in this particular context. And the following week you can lose it and you can spend 2 months hiding under your pillow feeling like an imposter. So this idea that we create ourselves as permanent states is just wrong, isn't it? If you listen to actual real people's stories, it's something that comes and goes. It's something that you can feel more strongly at some times of your life than others, at some times of your day than others, at some times of the year, and at different ages, depending on how confident you get with getting older, all those kinds of things. So I think for me, it's about a radical transparency about the way we live our lives and what's real. And, you know, oral history is so fantastic for that, because we're not glossing over anything. We're not sort of saying, you know, okay, we can not be imposters now because of this, that and the other. Well, we all know that's actually not true. It comes and goes.
At Chiva, we're always trying to put young people first. And as with all the topics, we discuss this with young people connected to the charity. Back with us is Ruth, who listened to these same clips along with other young people at Chiva. Firstly, Ruth, what does activism mean to you?
I think activism is a lot simpler than what people may think it is. I think when you think of activism, you might think of someone running into parliament saying really important things or protesting, which obviously is very important. But I think for me, I think activism very much starts with how you interact with other people and what you expose yourself to and what you involve yourself with, and almost how you respond to those things. So say, for example, you live in a small town where there's not that much going on, but if you get yourself involved with things that are going on around you, even if it is not even in your way, I think that's activism, because you're putting yourself in positions of people that need help, even if that's not you. And so I think for me, activism is understanding other people and putting their experiences ahead of yours in order for you to help them.
I like what you said about how activism isn't just like, doesn't have to be these big things like going into parliament. Yeah. And for me, I think activism is very much that, even if it's just a small thing, making a little change has a big impact. But I think for me, it means working towards a future that is not only better for young people living with HIV, but a future that is better for everyone living with HIV, and a future that enables young people to share their stories, whether they're kept secret, well, not secret, but just put away for 70 years, or whether they want to do that now and just share their stories as they are, but to know that nothing bad will come of that, and that we'll be living in a more understanding environment, a more empathetic environment, and just an environment that doesn't see HIV as this, oh no, that's awful. And it's more like any health condition, just destigmatized, livable, and truly what it actually is not a problem.
And you think about who can speak as well, because, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, from some countries in the world, you can't speak without levels of persecution.
Yeah.
And, you know, so whose voices are we getting? And I think even in the context of oral history, you know, we've got to challenge all of those assumptions yeah. that, you know, only some people get a voice. How do you balance the elite versus the grassroots stories? It's harder in some cultures than others to be open about things. You know, it's not unproblematic.
I think that brings a good point, though, back to the sort of what does activism mean to us, is that, you know, for, say, a HIV-positive person who is living in a country where, you know, they will be criminalised for living with HIV, for purely being who they are, them just existing is an act of defiance and an act of activism, whether they acknowledge that or not. And I think that is also an important thing around activism, is acknowledging that for some people, just living their lives is all they need to do to make their point. And I think that's important to note. So, Ruth, I just wanted to know sort of what your opinion was from the vibe and reaction you got from the workshops you attended.
I think lots of our young people were very passionate about what these people had to say, but also could relate in some ways but couldn't in some others. And I think one of them was about activism and calling themselves activists. And some of the young people resonated with what Portia said, and that despite living with HIV and wanting change, they didn't want to be activists. So I think one question we came up with was, what are some of the difficulties around becoming an activist?
For me, in terms of, you know, the difficulties of being an activist, like we sort of know that in this workshop was mentioned quite a bit, it's just the sort of pressure there is as a young person to consistently be told that you are the future. And the reality is over the years, I've heard people say you are the future so many times. The future is happening right now. This isn't in 20 years, like I'm not, this is not some sort of army training program in which in 20 years time, I'm going to be the top of my game and I'm going to be on it. What if I'm too tired by then? And it's great at the same time, like lovely to know that like there is a future, but also, do we still want to be fighting these same battles like you mentioned about passing that responsibility on? Is it going to be the same battles? What are we actually going to be sort of fighting for? And this, it's sort of burdensome in a sense of, this is on your shoulders now, off you go, have fun. But also at the same time, appreciating what has come before us to help us get to where we are today, in terms of, you know, medical advancements and just the fact that we are able to live our lives. But who, so when often people do come to me and they're like, can you speak about young people? And I'm like, I'm not the face of all young people. In fact, I look nothing like the majority, and that's okay. But people really need to look around and realize there's a lot more people out there who can talk about this, and just giving them that sort of uplift and platforming more opinions and voices. And I think that's really important.
during the discussion we had with the young people, others felt that they needed to represent the lived experience of being, for example, a young person with HIV or a trans person living with HIV, which might be a less common situation. So I think their question was, how do you go about finding role models in these specific areas or careers?
I think for me, as a trans person living with HIV, there, especially as a trans man, which is very underrepresented in HIV, there was no one I could ever look up to. You know, I'd like go digging on Google to try and find anything, and it would often just be like, some exist out there in the wild, like some sort of hunt them down, hope for the best. Which sort of meant that sort of time between coming out as trans and being HIV positive, and just sort of before, you know, really feeling comfortable and confident in that, it meant sort of like working it out on your own and feeling very isolated. And for me, it was definitely one of the reasons why I sort of publicly came out about my HIV and also being a trans person, is because, you know, if there is anyone, say, younger than me, who's, you know, thinking of coming out as trans or is possibly, you know, questioning their identity, just knowing that they do have someone they can look up to that's doing all right. Thanks, Ruth. And thanks to all of you for being here today and across the whole series. We've heard some amazing first-hand accounts of the experiences of young people living with HIV, and hopefully we have shed a light on the challenges faced and the importance of making sure young people are seen. The starting point for the series was the wealth of clips in the Positively Spoken archive that needed to be heard by a wider audience, and our aim was to build upon and add to that oral history archive to benefit future generations. So after the series was complete, we caught up once again with podcast regular Dr. Wendy Rickard to discuss what we've achieved.
This has been a great experience, and I think we've learned a whole range of things. It's very important to recognise that there's not a single view, but a larger number of very nuanced ideas that go into this kind of understanding. And I think young people in relation to HIV get very little voice on an international level. And if they get a voice at all, then it's usually one sentence. So this kind of thing has really made it possible to give a whole range of voices and a whole nuanced understanding of the kinds of issues that are important to people. It emphasises the whole issue about it being participative. We've heard from a whole range of experts. We've heard from young people themselves as participants. We've had Eli in a brilliant role, commanding everybody and asking the questions, as you did just there. And it's been wonderful to use some of the extracts that we managed to get from the international conference in Montreal as well. So there's an international angle there. In terms of oral history, and as an oral historian, I will come from that angle, it's really given us a chance to handle some quite delicate matters. You know, there's a lot of hard questions around HIV. And maybe this just scrapes the surface, but it reveals what some of those questions are and some of the important voices around in tackling those questions. But it emphasises that the voices that speak the loudest are the young people themselves. And I think some of the clips, you know, we heard from Kareem, we heard from Barbara, we heard from Agnes. They really give us a springboard into lots of other discussions. So from listening back to the podcasts that have been recorded, it's been a really nice way to give people an opportunity to contribute, give them a starting point to have some of those conversations. This hasn't been about telling people what to think. It's about sort of disrupting people's narratives and leaving them open to actively absorb and interpret those stories for themselves. And again, I hope that's something that oral history can achieve. I think there's something very important for me about the value of sound, both in the past and in the future. And what this emphasises to me is that we still can't use images of young people with HIV comfortably because of all the the dangers of stigma, the dangers of revealing too much about people personally that will be wrongly interpreted, and exposing people. And so sound and using people's voices has been a really important way to make it possible to have conversations about the future and into the future. There's been some really important work going on around by the National HIV Story Trust just recently, which has been filming people telling their stories of the past. In relation to young people, we still can't do that. So these stories and spreading these stories has been a way to engage with a much more positive response potentially. Young people tend to expect a negative response if they go around talking about HIV and talking about their own HIV. And this is a way to perhaps just respond differently and respond more responsibly and put people at the centre of their own story. In terms of the global epidemic, I think the youth voice is seldom heard. So here we are, shouting loudly.
With that in mind, we asked each of our expert contributors two questions before we let them go. Firstly, what does activism mean to them? And secondly, what does HIV care look like in the future?
Oh my goodness, activism to me means being there to amplify voices of those that need their voices amplified in a way that represents communities that are sometimes not ever spoken to about their lives and the way they choose to lead their lives.
I think activism comes in all shapes and forms. There is the activism where you are marching, where you are demanding change. The kind of activist I am is a bit quieter, I think. I am in the background often, but I'm sitting on committees saying we have to improve our standards. Care for people with HIV has to be equitable. It's often a much longer term role as far as I'm concerned, but I'm very happy to sit on a very, very boring committee.
I think it really just means power to the people. You know, people are living with HIV. It's their lives. We are there to support them in it.
Okay, so activism for me means active engagement, because I think we can all go about our business and not be negative towards people living with HIV. But what are we specifically doing to challenge stigma and to educate others? Because I think that's where the real work comes into play.
Activism means a whole range of different things. There's the more obvious ones around campaigning, putting out a message for the public. But actually, to me, activism is much more of the little decisions you make every day to make a change and to make the world a better place.
HIV care will be very normal. We will not have clinics that are only for HIV. We will have all healthcare professionals understanding how to look after a patient living with HIV plus other comorbidities. And HIV care will be stigma-free.
Health-wise, I feel like we're at a really good place with HIV. People living with HIV can take one pill a day and be undetectable and untransmittable. But I think there is still a way to go in terms of, I guess, the holistic care approach and looking at HIV from multi layers in terms of making sure that everybody has the emotional and psychosocial support that they require to live a healthy and happy life.
I think it's incredibly exciting. I think for me, it's an utter privilege to see young people enter their fifth decade, so go into their 40s, having known them for 25 years. I think treatment will get simpler. Long-acting formulations are now available and will increasingly become available with agents that really have a high genetic barrier to resistance and offer 6-monthly or yearly treatment. So they can choose one pill once a day or a long-acting formulation.
I think in terms of the way HIV care is organised, things will become more ordinary. People will be treated in GP surgeries. We probably will move away from specialist centres because there's no need for them, because having HIV might be no worse than having asthma.
In the future, I think I'd really like to see HIV care move much more towards a more holistic approach, recognising that not just HIV care, but health in general is influenced by schools and all the different things that are happening around a person, not just while they're sat in the clinic with their doctor.
Thanks for listening to Positive Advice. I'm Eli Fitzgerald. Thanks to Amanda Ely, Wendy Ricard, and Ruth McCoe for joining me today. This was the final episode. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the series. If you want to learn more about Chiva, or if you want to access clips and updates from the Positively Spoken project, then head to chiva.org.uk and follow the links there. Positive Advice is a TBI media production for Chiva.